faithful Packet Pushers listeners will know that we've covered SD-WAN quite a bit in 2015. Software-defined WAN takes a step beyond traditional routing protocols and QoS. SD-WAN technology allows an organization to use a mix of WAN links, including public internet links, and manage them as a unified, secure, wide area network. Special software then monitors the quality of the links in real time and makes sure that all applications, including voice, are sent across a link that offers the quality an individual application needs. Okay, so that's SD-WAN kind of in a nutshell. And what you end up with is a WAN that delivers application-centric forwarding, but one that is operated centrally with strong policy management, monitoring, and reporting capabilities. All right, so today on the Packet Pushers podcast, Talare returns as a sponsor, but this time they've brought some customers. Oh yes, on this show we'll have a panel discussion to get into the real-world experience of running a Talare SD-WAN. I am Ethan Banks, and joining me today is Greg Farrow. Still in the land of 3G bandwidth poverty, Greg, say hello.
Here I am in the land of savages and beating off those people with sticks to get to the free Wi-Fi in the coffee shops. There aren't any here. One day, when I grow up...
It's not just 3G, it's only three bars of 3G. It is kind of sad.
It is, but you keep telling me it's actually not too bad, which nobody's actually said it's actually really good. They just keep saying not too bad.
It's right. It is very listenable, although it does fade in and fade out. And so, listeners, we apologize in advance if Greg's signal fades in and fades out a bit during this particular recording. And so let's introduce our guests that are on the show. There's a whole bunch of them, and so I'm going to read off everybody's name and title and where they're from. First off, John Dickey, who was on the show before, CTO and co-founder of Talare, and then he's brought with him four customers. Corey Miller, VP of Engineering Services at Bremer Bank. Mike Benjamin, 911 Technical Manager for the City of Phoenix, Maricopa Region. Robert Pickering, VP of Information Services at AAA Allied Group, and then Doug Hoag, Senior Telecom Network Security Analyst from UniFirst Corporation. And then the way we're going to handle this show today is, think of it like a panel, listeners. Think of it as if you're in, the ballroom, and there's all the people up front, and there's the water up there, and there are the microphones, and there's a moderator. We're going to try to run it that way and see if we can herd these cats into getting some useful information communicated about Talare SD-WAN. And what I thought we should do is start off with some level setting. It seems to me that those of you that are listening to this show and keep hearing about SD-WAN go, why do I even care? What do I want to do with this product that you guys keep talking about with all your different vendors that come on and talk about it? Okay, fine. Fair question. So let's start there. Why don't we start with Corey? Would you describe your network and how your business used the network prior to Talare? And then what were the issues that you were having with that network that, you know, what is it you were trying to improve?
Sure. We're Bremer Bank. We've got roughly 100 plus sites, branches that we have across the standard network for a lot of places, MPLS, T1s or multiple T1s at larger sites. Some of our critical sites at the time when we first started or when I came on were using another MPLS provider. So we'd have two at a couple of the critical sites, and then we were switching if one of the other, if the main provider went down. A lot of the problems that we had with it, just maintaining that network across, especially when we were dropping stuff in the banking business, if we're doing loans, if we're on the phone, and the connection breaks, most of those applications will automatically require us to reauthorize as soon as it's re-linked back up at that point. And if you're in the middle of a long house loan or car loans and you do that and you break that and you have to start that over, that gives a very bad customer experience is essentially what it does. The other case is when it fails over. In our case, with the standard Cisco equipment, we are getting anywhere from a 5 to an 8 second flip at that point, which in many cases would cause our either Citrix sessions or our applications to interrupt and lose the particular session at that instance. So a lot of it was trying to find something that would give us better availability, allow us to be able to expand out and have to the rest of the sites. If we had 20-30% of our sites were running MPLS with a backup MPLS, we wanted to expand that across. And what could we use internet? Could we use other providers across that and do it for a fairly a decent cost or not too expensive, I guess. So a lot of it was trying to find multiple links and trying to reduce that dropout each time the if one of the providers failed, so that we didn't lose the sessions. And that's really how why we started looking for something at that which now is called probably a software defined WAN, but we're looking at different technologies that could accomplish that.
Okay, that's a good place to level set. And I want us to all go around the table and everyone to tell that same kind of story, and then we're going to get into the Telari specifics here. So Mike, why don't you, same story, describe your network, how you guys use it prior to Telari, and the big issues that you were trying to solve.
For years, we operated what we wanted to consider a high availability network, dual hub and spoke, multiple providers, redundant edge routers. We use Cisco EIGRP, you know, on and on and on. Things like EIGRP are great, easy to configure, you know, pretty easy to tighten down. But as Corey mentioned, they're not particularly fast when converging. And we were getting the same type of measurements, you know, 2 to 8 seconds for network convergence upon, well, depending on the type of failure.
Like a link flap or either a link down and then, you know, waiting for the network to reconverge around that event.
Correct. So and we also had bandwidth sitting idle. So we're using non-equal paths, and to consider load balancing or multipathing was going to be a lot of work. And we just don't have the staff time or expertise really to manage that on a real dynamic basis. We serve a public safety function. We deliver 911 calls and the data associated with those calls. Our case isn't really about how high we can scale bandwidth or how we can maximize the number of callers. We're about trying to maximize uptime and to reduce or eliminate the effect of poorly performing telecom paths. We serve 25 911 call centers throughout the Metro Phoenix area. Historically, many of these have had bad entrance facility, the telecom coming into these buildings. So we've worked for over 10 years, you know, essentially with no budget, you know, during this recession period here to improve this. And along the way, we've taken two and three, and we've got designs on a fourth separate provider and fed them through the Telari APN. If you've got, you know, three providers, you don't really have to worry too much about one provider having a problem. The APN manages those troubles, whether it be fade or loss or links flapping, while we can engage the provider, all while still having Telari, you know, handle these, quote, backup providers.
The end goal being then you've got 911 calls flowing smoothly, you know, across that infrastructure. You're building redundancy into the physical infrastructure, but not relying on routing protocols to cope with all of that. You're dealing with Telari APN to monitor link quality and ensure that calls are being routed across links that are up and performing well.
Right. If you can imagine 2 to 8 seconds of dead time or poor audio on a 911 call, that's just, it's not acceptable. And when you're working off of trying to replace legacy telecom, you know, 50 years of 911, 100-year head start of, you know, legacy telecom, It should be better. You shouldn't be working with technology that moves forward that, you know, places calls in jeopardy. The system should be, you know, able to perform better than what they're replacing.
Well, Doug, let's move on to you. Same level setting story.
We have had a 100-200 location MPLS network with T1 access at all of the locations. And our use case was a little different. What was happening was we were running out of bandwidth at the location just for our core business applications. All of our T1s were utilized at about 90%. We had fine-tuned as much as we could, and we were still having performance issues.
You were peaking at 90%, or was that a sustained 90%?
That was many times during the day a sustained 90%.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. You really were getting the most out of the lines then.
We
got it.
We were getting everything. And we do a lot of video conferencing. UniFirst has approximately 200 locations throughout North America and Canada. And we run anywhere between 700 to 800 video conference calls a month. Hmm. On top of voice over IP and our regular business settings. And the network was just too small. So we were looking for ways to increase our bandwidth. We have built-in
processes to take care of when the lines are down, and lines can be down for 24 hours without really impacting business. But the bandwidth just wasn't there, and we did not want to double, triple our cost by just putting in more MPLS on networks. So what we decided, what we were looking for, was a way to utilize the internet and the relatively cheap bandwidth that you could get through ISPs, cable modems, that sort of a solution. We found Telari, and it worked for us.
Got it. Okay. And then last level-setting story will come from Rob. Now, you worked for AAA, I said, when I introduced it. Is that that's AAA like I think a AAA. They come and help you when your car is dead on the side of the road, that kind of thing?
That's exactly us. We tow your car, but we also have 11 other lines of business that we support. We have about 70 locations spread over 7 states, and we've got a network very, very similar to Doug's. A lot of MPLS circuits, mostly T1s, several sites. As we run out of T1 bandwidth, we add a bonded T1. That can start to get expensive for these small retail offices that are both bandwidth hungry and running lean at this point with a large retail presence. So we, too, were looking for a solution that would allow us to scale the wide area network, utilize cheaper bandwidth, whether it be cable modems, DSL lines, anything that we could get, and yet maintain those costs for those individual offices. So very, very similar to his description of his solution. We went and we actually found Telari at one of our clients. They were already running it, and we started talking to them about the solution and how they were utilizing it in exactly the same fashion we were curious about, and that got us started down the path.
Now, you were, I mean, Telari's been around for a number of years, not a startup. I mean, they've been delivering SD-WAN for a while. Why, but you're a new Telari customer. So, I mean, other than you saw it at a customer, why did you select Telari as opposed to one of the startups that's out there nowadays?
We actually weren't looking for an SD-WAN. We were looking to figure out a way that would contain costs and allow us to grow the bandwidth. And so we were pretty open to whatever. When we saw the solution at this client site, we got familiar with it. We reached out to the Telari guys, started talking to them about the solution, and it seemed to meet all of the goals that we had, specifically around making sure that we are accepting credit cards at these remote sites. We are processing member transactions. We are taking insurance applications. So we wanted to make sure this was secure, that there was a mechanism by which we could utilize internet bandwidth and not worry about some of that transmission, but yet be able to control the voice quality of the voice over IP that's at that site, as well as maintain the security of the overall platform, and yet make it so that we can utilize cheaper bandwidth.
Thank you all for the level setting part of this show. I think we all got a pretty good idea what your network is. Much of that sounded familiar to me, the different environments that I've worked in over time and similar kinds of problems. Oh, I need more than T1. What's this going to cost me? You know, that those kinds of challenges. So let's move from there, now that you're all using Telari, into the operational reality of living with an SD-WAN product. Michael, we can start with you. Your environment is low risk. We kind of established that. You know, you're dealing with the 911 calls, and you can't have even 2 to 8 seconds, as you described it, of poor voice quality. It's simply unacceptable. And you're using Telari before SD-WAN was even a buzzword. So in my mind, I'm going, okay, how is this not a risky choice? Because to me, it seems like you're kind of on the cutting edge of technology here.
We really waded into it. We didn't go, you know, full on. This has evolved with us as we've moved to voice as data. Again, 911 and legacy telecom has been around for more than decades. It's been around for a century, so we have to carefully move through as we evolve. We can't just jump out and take big risks. One of the risks, though, that moving to an IP world is that how do you beat a T1 for reliability in a local market? Again, everything here is in a metro area, so I don't have T1s going interstate or intercontinental or anything like that. So it's really tough to beat the availability of the legacy telecom. One way we think that we can do that, and that Telarius has helped us prove, is that we can assemble bandwidth from many different providers, different types of providers. So we have assembled bandwidth from government and commercial metro Ethernet, both on fiber and copper, DSL, data over cable, and we've even begun to take a look at 4G. And on top of that, we also have access to microwave. So we have bandwidth available, but how do we really make the best use of all that bandwidth?
And I think you really hit on an important phrasing here. You said assembled bandwidth, which I like, because it's as you're abstracting away the physical links using SD-WAN, what those links are kind of doesn't matter because you're plugging them into the SD-WAN appliance that's going to apply an overlay, and then the physical links don't matter at that point. So it truly is, you know, you're assembling bandwidth. I think that's a great way to put it.
Yeah, and Telarius makes this, you know, very manageable. You don't assemble IPsec over cable modems and DSL and 4G with the long latencies and the big swings in latencies unless you have something that can respond to those things dynamically. And for us, this type of assembling of this group of different bandwidth sources, it just really, it wouldn't be possible without this type of product.
Ethan, if I may add, about five years now, Michael, that we've been working with each other, Telarius and you. And truthfully, I think Michael's been an amazing learning coach for us, too, as he was learning and deploying the technology in a staged way. We were learning more and more about how to make it worthy of his trust. So I just want to make sure I noted that that Michael's been here for a long time, but he's we've grown a lot through our relationship with Michael.
Mike, another follow-up question here. As John just pointed out, you're a five-year Telarius customer. Okay, so how hard is it to install and operate Telarius then? I mean, I get that it makes assembling bandwidth easier and takes care of a lot of the oddities of the various characteristics of each of those physical lines, DSL behaving differently than T1 behaving differently than, 4G, which you're evaluating and so on. Okay, so, but what about, getting the system installed and operational? Did you guys do this yourself or did you bring in, help from Telarius? How did that work?
So we did have some integration support early on, kind of moving from the thought processes, the legacy design processes and IP with dynamic routing protocols and moving into what's now being called, software-defined networking. It's a bit of a leap of faith. There's things that you get used to, after doing networking for years and years. For us, we had a dynamic routing protocol. Now, we don't have a dynamic routing protocol in the WAN. And when I talk to folks that aren't as familiar with SD and the WAN, they look at me like, how can you do that? And it's like, well, if you want to take a look at the drawings, if you want to take a look at what's behind this, you don't need those type of implements because Telarius is taking care of that. So that part was pretty tough early on. And we're growing up, our network from an IP perspective was not carrying voice as data in 2010, except in a couple of real, small places that we had tightly controlled. And of course, in the LAN, we were doing it, but not in the WAN. So what's really interesting about this is that as we've grown with Telarius over the last 5 years, we are carrying more and more of our traffic on IP. Voice as data, it's emerged. It's proven that we can operate and build this. So really, once we made that leap of faith, if you will, or once we saw that the Telarius APN could handle what we were doing, we could operate it, the ads, moves, and changes and so forth after that have been really, pretty straightforward. We do have a lot of, time, behind the wheel, so to speak, in making sure that when we go into a network change, we're able to move traffic away from Telarius and traffic back into the Telarius network. Those are things that we have to do because we don't have a dark window. We have to be available for a call on a 24-hour basis. So we do, change windows at 3 or 4 a.m. in the morning, but these are hot cuts during this time. And John and his group at Telarius have really listened to us on that, and they've really done what they can, I think, to drive down the disruptive changes that are associated with the product at this point. Ultimately, we'd like to see those driven down even further, but they've been very open. They communicated very clearly when we would expect to have a disruptive change event. And we've been able over the years to, you know, learn to operate under those restrictions, if you will, or those weaknesses in the product.
Got it. So early on, right, it was a sea change. And so you had some assistance from Telaria to bring it in. And now you've got a process down and you can even do a hot cut in real time, kind of because you have to. And it may not be 100% seamless, but you've got the process down where you can, transfer traffic onto that. Onto a newly stood up Telaria device on your own via an established process, and it's just a normal thing for you guys to do.
Again, from Michael and his team, we've learned a lot, and actually those lessons have actually been deployed in other 911 phone systems and ambulance services, even internationally now. Telaria may be not a startup anymore, but we're sure as heck learning like one all the time. So just sharing with you that the best practices Michael has established are best practices we share with others as we go too.
Yeah, it's great. Well, let's move the conversation along to scaling. And Doug, your environment is kind of sizable. You got a couple of hundred sites there where you've deployed Telaria. How's the scaling worked for you as you've grown your SD-WAN?
Well, scalability was really a major issue that we had and a major requirement right from the start, just because of the sheer number of sites. And we've worked out a process along with Telaria, just like Michael, that actually works very well for us. When we do roll out a new site, all we need to do is configure the basic network management IP and some other basic network information and ship the box to the site. The site will plug it in. There doesn't need to be an engineer on site or anybody. They basically need to just plug power to it and plug it into the network, and it's all pre-configured. But at that point, while that's being shipped, we configure the NCN, the control node, with the appropriate WAN information for that site, class of service, quality of service, different classes, bandwidth. And when the box is arrived, we plug it in, we turn it on, we will push that configuration down to that site from our desktop, and we are off and running.
When you ship that box, let's say this is the remote node that's heading out to an office. One more time, what is it you put on it? Just a management IP?
I just put a management IP, my time sync, my DNS, all the basic stuff that allows it to connect to the network.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then it gets there, they plug it in, and it phones home to that, you described the NCN?
It actually, at that point, for the very first time, it does not phone home. We will configure the NCN here, create a configuration file, but once I see the device on the network, I will take a copy of that configuration file and push it down by the management IP.
And then the rest of the policy is going to follow, I assume, because you had described quality of service and various parameters that you want that node to enforce.
That is correct. All of that is then pushed down to the node. And if the version that I am putting on, for example, has changed, or anything like that, it will automatically update with the new information.
So then some other scaling-related questions. Do you do code upgrades across your Telaria infrastructure?
We do. Those are very simple as well. We do those from our corporate office, from our NCN. We'll download the code. We'll put it on the NCN. We'll go up all the way to a point of staging it, which is downloading it and everything right down to the node during the day. And we will then, there's a very nice little feature in the Telaria that allows us to time a restart of the remote node or whatever nodes we are updating at the time, so that we'll set it up, say boot it in 5 hours, and it will reboot and restart, and everything works fine.
So under what circumstances would you have to log into a remote node, specifically that one device, and do something once it's been set up, Is there ever a scenario like that?
There are some built-in graphs and information that allow you to see what is happening at that node. We also have a management software here at corporate where we can see that information as well, all 200 nodes that are pulled together. But if there are issues at a location that really may not even have to deal with the Tulare itself, but some type of application issue or a video conference call is choppy or something, you can actually log into that node and use it as a troubleshooting node to find out what's going on with that video call. I can look at all my individual traffic paths. I can look at the latency, the jitter, all of that information. I can even do packet captures right directly off the WAN. So I can use that node as a troubleshooting device for my WAN issues at that particular site.
But from a management perspective, you don't have to individually configure that device. That all happens centrally from the NCN.
That is correct.
Got it. Okay. And then as far as the number of nodes that you've got, I think you've got about a couple hundred, we said, right?
That is correct.
Do you have a sense of how much bigger you could grow this environment if you needed to?
There are code changes that are coming out all the time to making the scalability a lot larger in increment. John can probably talk to that. But I know when UniFirst originally bought the product, 200 locations were not supported. I believe at that time it was a maximum of 150. We went ahead and started scaling it out. When that code became available, we upgraded the code from the NCN, pushed it down to all the sites, and just kept right on implementing.
John, did you want to comment on that?
Again, it's a similar pattern with Michael, with Doug and his team, in that, you know, we kind of believe in an agile world here where good feedback justifies good products, right? And so when Doug and his team said, listen, this is our challenge, what can you do for us? We then, you know, got together, got out the pencil, started sharpening up, and came together with a solution. Actually, even sent them pictures of our very large test bed to show them what we were doing while we were going at. So it's kind of like a little bit, how would I say this in the right way? It's kind of like it's dual parenthood here. It's Doug's team's inspiration, and we follow through and provide it to them. And we continue to do that as we speak with Corey and Doug and others like them.
So at this point, what's your max number? Do you happen to know off the top of your head?
Well, truthfully, depending on how you do it, right, you can scale, we call them APN domains. You can scale to, I think we're coming up with 500 sites now and one single APN domain. And now there's VRFs and stuff within that too. But you can actually, you know, horizontally scale to any number you want. You just need to have different NCN controllers, you know, so all your eggs aren't in just one basket. Mm-hmm. But within one NCN controller right now, we're going to provide support for 500 nodes. But with multiple NCN controllers, you can go wherever you want to. And by the way, let's also acknowledge that there's also cloud Tulare as well as VT, a virtual Tulare. And that, you know, frankly, just spin up the Amazon and get more as you want.
Well, Rob, let's shift the conversation over to you. We mentioned earlier chatting with you that you were a relatively new Tulare customer. And so I'm going to guess that when you were implementing this, it's maybe been unfamiliar to you and you've had to be on the phone with support. So I am curious to know how your support experience has been.
We've had an outstanding experience with John and his team and the Tulare itself. It's interesting that when you haven't experienced, and I think it was Michael that talked about it initially, when you haven't experienced an SD-WAN product, that you kind of have to level set and even take a step back as to how the network is designed and how it's going to behave. And we definitely experienced that. We did a proof of concept, and then we turned up a live site, and then we turned up a second live site, and we've got more nodes sitting in the office next to me to turn up at additional sites. But you kind of have to wade in slowly and understand what impact it's having. And it's not so much the Tulare itself. It's just changing the way that the network architecture is working so that it can be software defined. And you try to, you know, build that trust. And John talked about it early on. One of the things in the Tulare that was really important to us was making sure that it could fail to wire so that if there was any problem, we could very quickly take the Tulare out of the equation and see if the problem was still there as we were learning to trust what we were seeing and understand what we were seeing. And we did it a couple times, and we've done it in both a hardware mode, literally unplugging the power out of the box and letting it fail to wire.
So it fails closed and just becomes a pass-through device at that point?
Exactly right.
Yeah.
And it does it. And what was really interesting for us was that that fail to wire can also be implemented in software. So you can just shut down the Telari services and the box behaves as if it's been powered off, which means you can do it remotely. And we had an occasion with some voice quality issues a couple of weeks ago that John and his team, you know, from our point of view, dropped everything that they were doing to help us with it. What had nothing to do with the Telari in and of itself, had to do with some other routing and voice issues inside our network. But our network engineer was able to log into the remote box, turn the services off. It fails to wire. We still have the problem. So then we say, okay, we've now built trust into the SD-WAN, and we'll take the next step and troubleshoot further through it. The other thing is, I think it was maybe when Doug was talking, the interface for doing these code upgrades and for doing these policy pushes is unique, at least from our standpoint. My network engineering team really enjoys that it kind of walks you through a change control process that says, okay, here's the config that you've got. We're now going to apply it. You need to approve this. Here's the change that's going to occur. Get ready to push it. Do you want to schedule it? Do you want it to be live? You know, okay, we're going to do it in 8 seconds, and you can kind of watch that process unfold and feel pretty confident that it's going to work.
It's interesting about the serviceability. I call it the Telari canary mode, right? Because it's like the canary in a coal mine. This device is sitting there learning a lot about the network and reacting to it real time. And sometimes it learns things that people don't know ahead of time. So when it's in there, it can be used as a device to analyze the network and identify those issues. But also, you know, as Doug mentioned and even Rob, it's a troubleshooting tool to assist you to say, oh, wow, I didn't know that. You know, I didn't know we were oversubscribing that EF class. Or
we often forget how dumb routers are and how, you know, decades old their model is. Packets just come in and come out. And, you know, as we've talked about here, a lot of the time, the real historical purpose for routers wasn't an IP thing. It was to transform the physical connections. A lot of people had Token Ring or ARCNET in their sites, and their WAN connection was V35 or Frame Relay or ATM or, you know, some sort of serial service. You know, the physical connection from a LAN to a WAN. And in 2015, we often forget that, you know, just being able to route packets from one interface to another interface is no longer the baseline. And what we should be able to do is get true visibility. And that's one of the big promises about SD-WAN and what Telari is doing. You're actually physically able to count every packet now.
That's correct. We watch every packet for its one-directional behavior, for jitter, latency, congestion, bandwidth, and other things such as that, packet loss too. But one other thing about just since we have this nice little group here, the shortchange feature is what Rob was talking about, the very straightforward, it's not like saving clicks here. We just, you know what's going to happen, stages, it gets done. That actually was really inspired by Michael's team, as well as another customer. And the reason we call it shortchange is because I got worried about Michael updating the network sometimes in the very early days. And so we implemented that because of Michael's requirements. And, you know, so it's kind of funny. It's a full loop here in this discussion.
Well, let's move the conversation ahead again to Corey. Now, Corey, we were doing a little chatting in the back channel before we started recording here and looking at notes in the Google Doc. And your company has been engaged in acquisitions, which I smirked as soon as I saw that, because I have also worked in that environment where, you know, every other month it seems like, yep, we're buying somebody else. Oh, really? And then it's the task of having to integrate that company with your network. You know, the first thing we'd always do is stand up an IPsec tunnel and so on. But as a Telari customer, I understand you've got a different strategy that you use when you are integrating new networks to your environment like this when you're doing acquisitions. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I think the Telari gives us that flexibility, just as we were talking about with the multiple points that you can feed into it and be able to get it back to your home office. A lot of what we've been doing with it, we can actually take, in many cases for our acquisition, as soon as they acquire that company, they're going to want to get network connectivity as quickly as possible in there in a secure but also stable manner at that point. With the Telari, we can, if needed, go into that location and use their very own internet links to be able to plug a node into there, get a network access with it. We can put a firewall on it to restrict that, but really tie those networks together without immediately trying to get connectivity either through their providers or our providers and try to get in there. So it really gives us flexibility in the beginning. And if we use their internet and throw a LTE or a 4G connection onto it, we can get the bandwidth that we need, at least get that initial connectivity. The other case that we run into is as you go through an acquisition, as you're either converting their network or you're running a parallel network next to theirs as you convert and run the applications, the advantage that it gives us is with those particular providers. Once you have a network connectivity, the really nice thing I like about Telarian and gives me leverage against our current vendors and new vendors is when we can connect in a new internet link, a new MPLS link, and we can monitor that before we even really bring it up. Telarian is going to tell us that, yes, that's we're getting the bandwidth that was required, the latency, the drop packets is low. We can actually use that in production at that point.
Because you're going to be pushing a bunch of test and monitoring traffic across that link before you necessarily bring it into the production environment, validate that it's got the quality required to push real traffic through it.
That's correct. And we don't have to do this at night. We can come in and have them add that link in the daytime, and we can monitor it, let it sit up for a couple days, and then add that as an aggregate into our network at this point. And so that allows us flexibility across either the vendors that we have. We can add or subtract those, and it gives us leverage in many cases when we're dealing with them at this point, saying, I don't need an MPLS link. I can get a broadband connection into that site, and by monitoring it, I can tell what my uptime is on that and the SLAs across that. So As you go through your acquisition and as you convert their networks over, you can essentially, if you needed to, tunnel. You could use the Telarian itself to almost tunnel right through their own networks and be able to create almost a parallel network within their environment and then connect your other connections as you're able to get either MPLS or broadband into those sites. And then as we switched over, their existing connections along with our new ones become the aggregate across those. So now all of our sites, in many cases, a lower cost per site because maybe we're not doing a bonded T1s. We're going to a one T1 and a broadband, or we're going to multiple broadband. And that gives us that flexibility across it so that the network in many cases, is not really the deterrent to being able to move forward in some of the project and some of the capabilities with it. So it's really given us a lot of flexibility across that to be able to respond real quick for our business.
Now, you were describing being able to do all that monitoring and validation of the quality of those links. Was that was there a specific product you were using to do that?
There is. We had a couple other products at one time, and then as we worked with Telarian and they came out with the Aware, which really aggregates a lot of the, as I think Doug was talking about or Michael was talking about, the individual nodes and how they're doing for performance. It really aggregates that up into a console that I can really go across and see how each and all of my links are performing across those systems and correspondingly the vendors that are providing that. So it really gives me leverage to go after those particular vendors. And I would say we've probably swapped out about 20% of our, if they were broadband or DSL, we can switch those vendors. It's not a big deal for us anymore because we can kind of do it live because we have the other connectivity to go through with it. And we have the ammunition to go back after them and saying, you said this is a 20 meg connection and it's barely 7 meg. You have a lot of latency. You have a lot of drops, and here's exactly where this is. And so it's really been a very useful tool for us to manage and watch our vendors. And then within that, we also see the traffic that's going through it. And the other nice thing I like it is the quality of service. If you have multiple links, you do MPLS, you're running QoS through different providers. They all have their different methods of setting it up. With Telarian, you can essentially remove those in your quality of service, which are given multiple levels beyond most providers, to be able to set that quality of service. It sets that across all of those aggregated bandwidths and everything to guarantee that as you go across each one of those and if one of your links goes down, it automatically adjusts that QoS within it. So you're really only setting one QoS and you're not worried about either your vendor inadvertently adjusting the QoS that hurts you or that you you've done things that that might affect it, that allows you to roll it all the way across that and guarantee that it works across all those.
John, just a point of clarification. Corey was talking here, but he mentioned Telari Aware. So if I'm a Telari customer, I've bought the SD-WAN product, am I also buying something called Aware, or is that part of the package?
It's an upsell, to be honest with you, but it's not that much of an upsell. We kind of view it as a good tool to establish the value of what the solution is doing. I mean, each one of those nodes is watching every packet, as I mentioned before, and mitigating issues as it sees it real time. But the Aware seeks out those SQL databases that are on those appliances. With, you know, it's not like NetFlow aggregator or something like that. It's, we have that as well, but frankly, it's the sucking up of that SQL database, providing that correlation and causation analysis at that higher strategic level, as Corey just mentioned, to use. That's an additional product, but it's definitely a useful product.
Got it. Okay. Thank you for that clarification. Well, as we're getting towards the end of the show here, I thought we'd spend some time on kind of looking ahead with what we can do with an SD-WAN and Telari that maybe we couldn't do before. And Doug, I think that's a good question for you. You've built this SD-WAN. You've got Telari in-house. And so exactly that. What can you do now that you didn't used to be able to do?
We're moving from a green screen text-based type applications at our locations for customer service and everything to more of a GUI-based type of applications. For example, our sales team is now have iPads with homegrown applications on them that allows them to service their customers and schedule and everything right there locally, and then upload that information back to the corporate office for analysis. We're also able to do high quality, near HD quality video conferencing now that we were not able to do. We're able to tie in our laptops and other video equipment to these video conferencing so that we can actually have the video conferencing on one screen and then display content on the other. And as we continue to go and new applications are developed, we have rolled out wireless at all 200 of our locations, and we are ready to roll out, hopefully in the near future, the ability for those trucks as they roll up to the loading dock to actually auto-connect to our network, to our servers and databases back here at the corporate office, and start doing some of the processes that are done at the end of the day. That's manual processes now.
So I wanted to drill into something you mentioned there. You were talking about HD conferencing and then able to have an application also running on a screen at the same time. Are you splitting applications between different physical links somehow? How are you pulling that off?
No, we actually let the Telari do that. We have the video conferencing equipment that we use is a Polycom. And there is a application that will run on the laptop or any other device that will allow you to share your laptop screen with the video conference itself. So there are two different paths, two different streams, if you will, but those all go through the Telari. The Telari will then make the decision. We run most of our video conferencing is actually running right over the internet. And we have very few issues compared to when the Telari was not part of the picture.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it does make sense. I was speculating in my brain, well, they could tag the traffic this way and then put a policy in there. But I get what you're saying. Yeah, the Telari can just manage that for you when you've got the bandwidth to deal with.
The Telari is aware of the policy taggings that come into it, as well as identifies the applications as they come in. But it's also latency aware. So the reason it jumps to the internet is because the internet's got lower latency. On the other hand, if there's an application that exceeds the capacity of any one of those links, for example, it will start latency aware balancing them so that, you know, you always migrate the interactive applications to lower latency links, as well as the, you know, file transfers and such can saturate the any one link, then it will float up to the top and take advantage of the higher latency links as well. So video conferencing interact, you know, as the migration of data being stored to the cloud or to the data center for security reasons, but interactive applications being pushed out to the edges, like, you know, it's becoming more dominant today. This latency aware stuff actually really helps a lot, and Doug's taking advantage of that.
Makes sense. Yeah, I get it. Mike, a question for you again. Look ahead. Be a little visionary here for us. What do you want to get out of your Telaria investment long term? I mean, do you have a vision for maybe what you want to see the product do next?
From a product perspective, I'm not really, you know, dialed in to say this is where I want the product to go. You know, I'm more about the results that I need and the platform that we are confident enough to move 911, not just the data, but the 911 voice to. So we run two networks. We run a telecom network. Some of that telecom network has been moved on to our IP network, but we don't want to run two networks. We don't want to run a legacy telecom network and an IP network. We want to be, you know, where the mainstream is, where all the new product development is, and so on and so forth, with one network that carries everything. And we feel that Telaria's has definitely provided us a platform we can be confident in to move 911 to. Sorry, it doesn't sound that sexy, but that's just what we do.
No, it's ideal. And it's sexy in the sense that voice is the biggest pain in the rear end to deliver reliably across an IP network, having been in that situation myself, trying to deal with that problem. It's annoying. And so when you have an appliance that you can deal with to get voice delivered reliably across your IP network, that's a pretty wonderful thing you can hang your hat on. And what's more interesting about it to me in your situation is the criticality of what's going on those voice calls. They're 911 calls. These are people calling in potentially with life-threatening or very immediately impactful situations in their lives that have to be addressed in real time. And so, yeah, it's very poignant, your use case and what the scenario is.
And just a level set on that as well, that it's a metro area that we handle here, 25 different 911 sites. There's about 10,000 911 calls a day. So we've moved roughly in the neighborhood of about 1,500 911 calls that absolutely require, for the voice portion of it, require IP as the transport. All of those 10,000 daily 911 calls rely on the IP network for the data, for the mapping, the other location information that's associated with every call. So going on 5 years solid, this has been our platform, and we're happy to be a partner.
And I'll open that same question up to any of the rest of you. Are there, you know, future looking? Are there things you're intending to do with Telaria, or that maybe you want the product to do? Anyone just jump in.
Hey, Ethan, it's Rob. I wanted to touch base real quick on one point that has been made a couple times, and that's around visibility. I mentioned during my initial level set that we had looked at a couple different technologies, including the Telaria, and one of the main factors that got us to pick Telaria was visibility. We put in a competitor's product. It was a little more difficult to get configured and running, but we got it configured and running and working, and then we had a problem, and there was zero visibility into what was causing the problem or how to correct it, and that was the nail that finished that coffin. So that got us to choose Telaria. As far as future direction, it's going to be improvements in that visibility. John and his team do a great job with it. I don't think you can ever have too much visibility in what's going on in your network and being able to troubleshoot it. So that would be my suggestion going forward, as well as something that my network engineers asked for, and that's a dynamic routing protocol. But I think some of that is, you know, you're coming from a dynamic routing protocol to an SD-WAN, and I believe Michael made the point that we got rid of that, and maybe that's something that we need to take a look at as well.
If I may comment on that, this is John. We have a dynamic routing protocol coming out real soon, and actually Rob and I have discussed it directly as well, and actually we're really excited about that release. Now, Telaria itself eliminates the need for many reasons to have the dynamic protocol running across the WAN. Obviously, there's BGP or whatever on the service provider links, but we also have a really good way to get traffic from point A to point B, and so us bringing out dynamic routing protocol, you know, both BGP and OSPF, will allow us to advertise that downstream to larger locations so that they'll know to take our directions as compared to taking alternative directions.
So just to clarify that, John, you're saying you're adding BGP and OSPF to announce to the core network, correct. Hey, my appliance can handle these routes?
We listen to advertisements and we will advertise, yes.
Got it. Okay. Okay, so today it's you actually use PBR or whatever to direct traffic to the appliance?
No, today it's actually static routes are configured in the product. And there's also an ability to leverage another router that we pull and get data for. But truthfully, the right answer is to support native BGP and OSPF. And that's what we're coming out with just in weeks.
One of the issues that we highlighted earlier here was the ability to have multiple WAN providers. And we talked to, somebody was saying they just brought on a fourth service provider into their network. Now, for most companies, that would be unimaginable, having four service providers and technologically converging those together. But that's not the question I want to ask. What I wanted to ask is that useful having multiple WAN providers financially in terms of getting them to compete for business? Does that work, or is that a fallacy that I've got?
This is Corey. I think I can answer that. We have two providers that primarily go between our two data centers, and then we have a lot of providers that are actually, and we hire an aggregate service that actually monitors and works whether they're broadband or MPLS at each of the sites and responds to those, since with Telari now, our engineers really don't have to worry about when one of those connections drops. We've used it quite extensively to be able to go and leverage across those with the SLAs and the reporting that we can get off the Telari. Yes, for us, it's been very easy for us to add other providers. The other aspect that everybody does is nobody really wants to go through the hassle of in the past switching providers, because you were going to take outages, you were doing it at night, you were going to impact the customers. Now with SD-WAN, like the Telari devices, you really can add and subtract those, and that gives you the flexibility where before you go, it's not worth the hassle to do this. Now you can go and leverage that against them. Where you might lose it is if you go across and say, I have 100 sites, where now you may say, I have 40 sites. That might do it, or I have two providers that are each supplying the 100 sites, then maybe you can get a little bit. But we've noticed that you can leverage it very competitively against those. And even the hardware, the Cisco and many of the other vendors, we're using it to leverage against them, because your voice gateway routers, if you're switching to SIP, a lot of the things that may have been expensive, not only from providers, but from equipment, we've gotten our vendors to drop their cost on that, because they know we may not need that equipment in another 3 years now that we've got Telari running across it.
Mm. So you've been able to achieve real leverage in terms of your supplier negotiations, because you can change supplier, you can...
That's correct.
Yeah,
and they now know that it is no longer a real big hassle for me to go in and say, okay, you're out of here. Mm-hmm. I'm going to connect somebody else up. And in fact, I can do that while you're still in that place. Wait until I know that connection is good, and I'm going to drop you next month at that point. And so it gives them a lot more incentive to be able to respond to our SLAs and a lot of our other questions or queries about their service.
Well, I do believe we are at the end of another Packet Pushers podcast, and as we traditionally do, I'd like to go around the table and ask anyone that's interested to plug their Twitter handle or blog, and I think, Rob, that pretty much means you, because the other guy's kind of chickened out. So, Rob, would you have a Twitter handle and a blog?
My pleasure. I'll be brave. Rob Pickering, at Rob Pickering on Twitter, and robpickering.com is my blog.
And John, thanks very much for organizing this call with your customers. You did a lot of the cat herding for us, which was wonderful. And I know we can follow you as well.
Okay. Well, yeah, you can definitely go out to Telari.com. And I have my own blogs out there. And I got some videos and such out there as well. So really appreciate the time today, guys. This was great. Thank you again.
Awesome. And Greg, 3G, it's still there. We can still hear you.
Yeah, I just the questions that come to my mind about SD-WAN is just great to hear these people talk about their real life experiences, because sometimes we talk about SD-WAN and it just sounds like it's you and me making it up on the spot. But we've spoken to people like, the team assembled here and talked about the different ways that they've deployed it. And a lot of what we talk about on the show comes from members of the audience or people that we've met or talked to, or, that type of thing. And getting that validation around the whole technology and in previously around show 236 when John actually, you know, we deep dived into the technology itself. So if you've heard the stories today and you think, I really would like to know how the technology works for that, go back and listen to show 236 where we did more than an hour, I think, on talking about the internal parts of Talarian. We really, really unpacked it there. So if you think this is interesting, don't hesitate to go back and hear about the technology before you ring Talarian. Make sure you know what it is you're getting into before you, you know, go the next step and start that POC.
And you can follow Greg on Twitter at Ethereal Mind, and his blog is etherealmind.com. I am Ethan Banks at EC Banks. EthanCBanks.com is my blog. And thank you for listening to Packet Pushers today. And thanks once again to Talari for sponsoring the Packet Pushers this week. You can find this and many more fine, free technical podcasts along with our community blog at packetpushers.net. So please follow us on Twitter at Packet Pushers, find us on LinkedIn, like us on Facebook, and rate us on iTunes. And last but not least, remember that too much networking would never be enough.